Dragon's Dogma 2, the highly anticipated successor to the cult classic Dragon's Dogma, is out now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S, and Steam. Dragon's Dogma 2 is a third-person action RPG boasting a richly detailed and deeply explorable fantasy world created using Capcom's RE engines, immersive graphics, groundbreaking character AI systems, and cutting-edge graphics. Dive into the vast and dynamic world where the Arisen is called upon to fulfill a forgotten destiny across the nations of Vermund, the kingdom of humanity, and Batal, the nation of Beastrin. Dragon's Dogma 2 revolves entirely around choice. Your choice, that is. From the sword and shield wielding fighter to the illusion conjuring trickster, there are over 10 unique vocations to choose from that all require experience to unlock new skills. And character customization is out of this world. Literally. Oh, and did I mention that the combat is really in-depth? It isn't just hacking at a giant's ankle for half an hour while you dodge roll attacks. You can engage enemies from a distance, climb up large foes, stab them in their weak points, use the terrain and trick, trip, or throw foes off high cliffs and raging waters. So visit DragonsDogma.com to buy the game and start your epic quest today. That's DragonsDogma.com to learn more.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the very special edition of Rooster Teeth Podcast. This week, we're joined by Mr. Bernie Burns,
Hello.
Matt Hullum, CEO, Gray Haddock, supervising producer, and Gus Cirola, as usual.
And I mean, I don't know. There's some of you, I'm sure, that are watching the podcast who might not read the website or might not follow us in various forms of social media. But for those of you who weren't aware already, last Thursday, our dear friend Monty Ohm had a simple medical procedure, and afterwards he had an extreme allergic reaction. He lost consciousness, and over the course of the last week, he's been hospitalized. He did not regain consciousness, and we are very sorry to say that Monty passed away yesterday, Sunday, February 1st, at about 4:34 in the afternoon. And so last week we missed the podcast. We did not have a live edition of it. We showed the PAX panel because we were dealing with this crisis at that time, but we weren't yet comfortable enough to really talk about it publicly because when Monty lost consciousness, he didn't really have a chance to tell us what his wishes would be. So we wanted to respect his privacy as much as we could. That being said, if we missed two podcasts in a row on Monty's behalf, I don't think Monty would have liked that very much.
I don't think he would have.
No,
I don't. Despite the fact he, you know, didn't feature regularly on the podcast, he was here most Mondays. Mooching pizza or watching off on the sides over here.
Or he would be in his office, and as he always did, he always was watching something and making something at the same time. That was kind of his MO. And he'd have the Rooster Teeth podcast on, and then he would stop to make sure to tweet at me that we had already talked about this or tell me in a way that I was wrong. But he also had suggestions when we were looking for something to talk about. Monty also had suggestions all the time of like, you know, talk about this or do that as well.
And sometimes listening very loudly in that little room back there. I was always concerned there was going to be a feedback loop that was emanating from Monty's corner,
you know,
in the podcast.
Jack wrote a journal talking about some of his memories of Monty today, and he posted it on the website. And he told a story I'd forgotten about, which was when we were out shooting the first immersion, which was the video game car, that, you know, we were between takes and we were between setups and we were all standing around and we were like, do you hear heavy metal music? Like, where is that coming from? And that was the first time I experienced Monty in powered down mode. He was just off to the side with his headphones in, full blast, and he was totally asleep. Like, we went up, we were like, are you okay? Do you want to turn that down a bit? And he just like woke up for a second. Like, nah.
It was loud enough that outside with the wind blowing like 20 miles per hour, you know, at this big wide open space, and everybody's running around yelling, that it sounded like, you know, the music was playing out of a boom box. it was directly in his ears, and he was just sleeping.
It was amazing.
He was just out. Yeah, he was hilarious.
I'm starting to wonder if I have to keep a tradition over in the animation department of just blasting that sound system from time to time, just to kind of keep everyone going.
Yeah.
Should be a rite of initiation, like during an all-nighter, like the newest person on the team has to wear the headphones and sit there and animate.
The crazy thing was, is where we filmed Immersion, we didn't realize at the time, but it was a block away from where we are now. Mm-hmm. Like, we came out to the old airport because it was the only tarmac where we thought we could run this truck privately without the cops stopping us, you know, with our blow-up dolls and Monty and Frank dressed as Yakuza.
He beat the shit out of me. I was going to say, he beat the shit out of me. He did not pull punches. He got me good. I had a bad bruise on my side from where he kicked me for like a week and a half after that.
That was a very physical shoot. I remember Jack also got like a horrific sunburn. I'm surprised you remember anything else, Jack, from that experience. But also, we hadn't been working with Monty. We worked with Monty for a while, I guess, at that point, but not doing much stuff out of the office. Have we made that short?
So here's the deal. So the first PAX East was when we showed the pilot episode of Immersion. It was also the first time we debuted Monty's work.
That's right.
So Monty had been working for us in total secret for 6 months.
Yeah. So we'd been working with him, but we hadn't done that much outside of the office. And you never know if somebody, when you go out on set or in the field, what their personality is going to be like, how it's going to be different than, you know, in the office. And it turns out he's just as crazy outside the office as he was in.
Yeah.
And really enjoyed beating you guys up.
Yeah, that was a fun day.
To show how unfamiliar we were with Monty at the time, I said, I felt nervous by asking him to play like essentially an Asian character in a sketch. So I asked him that. Of course, he was completely fine with it. And then I asked him, do you have like a crazy suit that you could wear? Something like really high fashion. Because I didn't know at that point in time. That was before I had seen Monty.
His response was, how many do you need?
Let me show you my collection of wigs that I have. But it was crazy to think, like, you know, Monty being a guy who he was so meticulous about the way he presented everything. He was so meticulous about the work that he did, the way he presented himself at conventions all the time. You know, he dressed to the nines and never dressed the same way twice that I can recall. It was amazing to me that somebody, knowing him now in hindsight, that he could go 6 months with like zero limelight, working so hard, mm-hmm, and just knowing that this moment was coming, you know?
You know, I was thinking about that today. I was thinking about the time we premiered his work there at PAX East, at the first PAX East.
Uh-huh.
And I never thought about it until today. Like, that's the building where I met him for the first time. I met him at Anime Boston in 2007.
Right.
The week that he had released Haloid. And I remember we saw it and we shared it all amongst the office like crazy. And I think independently, all of us emailed him immediately saying, you need to come work for us. And it's like, it's one of the few fanboy moments I've ever had at a convention was he emailed me back and I was like, I'm going to get to meet Monty.
Yeah.
Like I was so excited about it. And he came by the booth and, you know, we went off and got like coffee there in the convention center. And we talked for like an hour about, you know, his process and how he did things. So it was really cool. You know, 3 years later, he didn't come work for his teeth immediately. He went and worked, in the video game industry, but eventually came back and it was cool 3 years later to have the big unveiling and be there with him, you know, when we showed off the Warthog breaking through the wall.
Well, that was funny too, because I think everybody did email him immediately and was like, you're badass. You got to come work for us. But then there was a conversation that we had where we're like, yeah, so, you know, we should do stuff together. And he was like, okay, cool. And then that was it. And then he went and took the job at the video game.
He went to work for Midway.
And then
Chicago.
Later he said to us, oh, you guys were trying to hire me? I thought you were just like messing around.
He's like, what did you think we were calling you? I didn't know what your plans were for.
Oh, cool. Okay, well, so let's work together now. So,
and it was years later. He went to work for Midway and then moved out to the West Coast after he changed jobs in the video game industry. And that's when I caught up with him again is Kale Anonymous, who used to run, is it Etsy? Is that how you say it? Et cetera, at Machinima. He had a panel and he invited me to be on it. And I was like, oh man, I've never been on a panel at Comic-Con. I don't know. What's that all about? And I looked at the list of people and on there was Monty Ohm. And so I said, oh, absolutely. If Monty Ohm's going to be there, I'd love to talk to him and see what he's up to. And I think it was like 3 years after we tried to hire him the first time, that we went out there. Cause it would have been, you know, the Buda office, Gus, and then all the way to Congress, mm-hmm, like halfway through our stay at Congress. And, yeah, we went on the panel together And, you know, Monty's just is very sure of himself, but he doesn't talk a lot in those scenarios. He doesn't do that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and,
that was, I mean, that's how I knew him for the first large chunk of time. I guess by this point, you guys were at 636. And, this was RVB 9. So he'd been with you guys for what, a little over a year at that point?
RVB 9. His first day was the last day of season 7.
Yeah.
He secretly worked on a shot in season 7 of Rivers Blue, the laser face shot. Because right. I had done it with like a Spartan laser, like kind of faked it. And Monty's like, oh, that could be better.
I remember you setting that shot up in order to try to plate it correctly and make it look right. You covered the television in post-it notes. Do you remember that?
Because I had to line it back up again.
Yeah, and you only were like trying to expose the parts of the shot that were supposed to line up, and everything else was covered in a sea of post-it notes.
Yeah.
And I think that's when he walked in. He saw that, and he was like, no. you're just disgusted at your process.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when we had to like match shots in theater mode in Halo. We would have to do that.
Oh, but, crazy. No, yeah. Nothing. Just doing, you know, so I met him early in RVB 9, and I was just doing VFX at the time. And a bunch of us were in the upstairs part of the office. And I think, you know, Monty more or less had the downstairs, like the entire back soundstage green screen area was his domain. And, you know, as RVB 9 ramped up, one or two more folks were occupying that space. Mm-hmm. But it was just kind of crazy to go downstairs and be where, you know, all of this stuff was spread out. You could see all the chemicals and the props and the costumes. Yeah, and all that. The Nerf stuff. I mean, I think, you know, he's probably the originator of half all the Nerf weaponry that's ever been around here. But
probably.
Yeah, just walking downstairs because all this animation would get delivered to post, and it was just crazy stuff. And I knew that the guy who had worked on Haloid was down there somewhere, went downstairs and just wanted to say hello. And I think I distinctly remember that the first words I got out of him were, for at least like the two or three times, and eventually, you know, you get the rhythm of conversation going, and then you realize that you can geek out about the same stuff, and just it takes off from there.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, I think he was still kind of getting used to the fact that the company was still growing and new faces were starting to show up, and he didn't have the whole, you know, 2,000 square foot things as his stage quite to himself anymore. But
yeah, but he was never like a huge, like an order, like a huge talker. Like at panels, he'd be very quiet on the podcast. He was definitely somebody who was so dedicated to his work that that's how he wanted to impress people, was that way. At the same time, you know, I think everyone here can tell a story of like being here for whatever reason at like midnight or 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. one night, just for whatever reason they were here. And then they get in a 2-hour conversation with Monty about something, whether it was like Matrix movies or, you know, Monty loved Game Grumps, you know, or just everything and anything. Monty was constantly consuming lots of different stuff and was a huge fan of so many different things.
Yeah. That's a wonderful thing about it. Just losing sense of time while talking to him was always the neatest little trick. You know, no matter what you were going to deep dive, whatever you're going to geek out about, and then you would blink and realize that 3 hours had gone by, and then you didn't get back to your shot or whatever.
So. Yeah. I thought that was really cool about him, that he did like basically everything in the world, you know, every kind of content. And he wasn't cynical about anything. I never like can remember a time where he, you know, made fun of somebody else's work or said something else wasn't cool enough or whatever. He just like could always find something really interesting and compelling about everything and wanted to talk about everything. He, you know, like, I mean, anything from, you know, big budget Hollywood movies to little independent movies to anime stuff to anything you find on the web. I mean, like you say, love Game Grumps and you love gaming videos and just pretty much anything under the sun. And he would always find something that was unique that you hadn't thought of about it as well.
Well, he thought it was he always said that he felt like that was a big part of our culture now, is watching things and then, you know, using those things. It's like you basically take your experience in the world and turn it around as a filter, and then like create something new and exciting, you know, based on the total aggregate experience of everything that you've seen and done.
And that was fascinating to me when he first came to work for us, was to see him work and all the time have something in a secondary monitor that he was watching at the same time or observing. I remember when years after he had been here for a few years, when Avatar came out on Blu-ray,
yeah,
he watched Avatar on half speed, like on a loop,
yep,
nonstop.
He had to get a special player that would play the whole movie at half speed.
And,
no sound.
Yeah, with no sound. He just wanted to see the way that everybody moved, the actors moved, and you know the computer-generated characters moved, and just to try to study, you know, the motion, which seems like most people wouldn't even think to look at that. It's like, oh, it looks good, so you ignore it. But no, it looks so good, you want to really drill down and understand it.
He never stopped being a student, as good as he got at everything else, that he would never stop learning. And that was something that I always found inspiring. And I know that everyone in the animation department felt the same way. And, you know, there was nothing that didn't have any value. There was everything, no matter whether it was a Hollywood A-list title or something someone produced on their own just through online or whatever, is that there was always something that you can learn in terms of why it worked or sometimes why it didn't. Mm-hmm. And he was constantly studying.
Mm-hmm. You know, I got a chance to talk to you, and Matt, I think you did too. I got a chance to talk with Monty's older sister during this last week when she was in town to see him and to hear about experiences when he was younger that he would just, you know, want something, not figure out how to get it, or they couldn't afford it, and he would just build it, find a way to build it himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought it was really special to me that she got a chance to come here and look at his workspace and, you know, see how, like, all these little contraptions and things that he's, like, built, you know, that, yeah. I mean, you go into his office, it's like all these trinkets that are, like, disassembled and reassembled back into something else.
Yeah. Or, like, even trinkets, like, from different objects. You know, he would take apart multiple objects and then recombine them and recontextualize them into new ways.
A couple of stories that I heard in the last week, which explained so much. Apparently, in the household growing up, you couldn't leave him unattended with electronics because you would leave the room and then come back in. Whatever it was disassembled. So he could just kind of figure out how it worked. There was another one which apparently he had a tendency to run around unclothed quite a bit as a kid, which now I get why he was running around all the time here wearing nothing but the mocap suit day in and day out.
that was his mode.
There was a period when he first got that mocap suit. He was so excited about us having mocap in the office that I don't think he took the suit off for like 5-6 days straight. I mean, what was it, Jack? It was just like, I mean, yeah, it was the suit had its own baked in Monty essence by the end of that week.
He would
go to the coffee shop and restaurants just down the block with the balls on it. Just like he lived in that suit.
We'd see on the monitor just like this, like 3D model eating a sandwich, drinking a down the block. We knew Monty was working. That's probably one of the harder moments that I've had in this past week was I came back in here and his mocap suit was hanging on a hook on the back of his door, and that was a tough moment for me to see that because I'm not used to seeing that thing inactive, you know?
Well, then, you know, you mentioned his sister talking about her stories of him as a kid and, you know, he was talking about him just being desperate to get, you know, Lego blocks, like not a set of, you know, like Star Wars prepackaged Legos or whatever, like, you know, we buy kids today, but it's just, you know, he just wanted anything he could create with. He was like desperate to create all the time. And he's still, you know, he was that way throughout his life. He was just like desperately creating. He just like had so much that he wanted to get out. And it was like however much time he spent on it wasn't enough. And that's why he would work. He would stay up for 30 hours. Not because people told him don't do that many times, but he just like, he could not help himself. He got so excited about the process and just so invigorated. It's like he would be in like the 24th hour and he'd get a second wind. It's like, this is great. I got to keep going. This is the best thing I've ever done. I'm so excited.
You know, you talk about how his sleep cycle was different, and
the Men in Black sleep cycle is.
I remember once at Ralph Ablanedo, we were down there, and it was before the studio was fully fleshed out. It was still kind of
Ralph Ablanedo is our last studio,
right? It was the old studio.
The place where, you know, and we were like 3 years for the last 3 years.
I needed to have a meeting. We were doing planning for RTX 2012, I think. And the conference room was taken. And so I said, well, let's just go meet out in the warehouse space. I don't think there's anybody in there. I peeked in. There was no one there. So I sat down at a table to have a meeting. And we're like halfway through the meeting, and I adjust my feet, and I feel something under the table.
Uh-oh.
Like, what the hell is that? And I look under the table, and Monty was curled up, taking a nap. Like, I guess he was on his off cycle from his 30-hour shift, and he had just, like, decided to, you know, take a nap there right by his computer. And I was like, we've been having this meeting for, like, 15 minutes, and he's stirred. He's just out. I was like, we got to go somewhere else.
Normally, you just have to surprise. Peel him off of his keyboard. You know, he's just sort of, you know, passed out right at his workstation. But, yeah.
That was also – it was one of the – frustrating things about working with him too is that he was always creating stuff. And so we'd be coming up on a major deadline, you know, for animation. Sometimes it'd be like 30 weeks in a row we were working on something. And it's like, hey, there's a deadline in 2 weeks. It's like, Monty, what are you doing? He's like, I've been spending the last week of my time making these mechanized robotic angel wings. And he like, look, I attached it to a servo and I can make them flex on their own. It's for a cosplay. And I was like, yeah, that is that good. That's cool. Can you not do that for like a month or so? He just built that. He just thought it'd be cool to have a pair of robot angel wings. I'm going to do that. And he built himself.
I don't know the time that he wasn't working on three things at once.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, constantly. Yeah. Heat of production. We could be crunching on anything. And there's the show in front of him. There's the next thing he's designing on the side. It could be, ideas for a video game or what have you. And then he's always thinking 1 year out in terms of like the next show he would want to do.
You know, you talk about how he's always building things and, you know, taking things apart and putting them together. You know that emoji with the hearts for eyes? I think that was his face when he saw the 3D printer that we had that.
Yeah. I said that to his sister, that the 3D printer showed up here and immediately went to Monty's desk. Somehow, I'm not sure how that happened.
It's the one-man QC department for all of Maker right now. Yeah, I don't know how many times he had them on the phone where he was needing new parts because he just drove it into the ground or just finding new ways to, you know, try and improve it. Well, if you guys obviously did this gear this way, it wouldn't have been breaking so much, blah, blah, blah. And he gave him so much feedback. It was just crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing was constantly in production, printing, making stuff. And
Yeah, it was, it was definitely a big part of Monty's life was dealing with the limitations of things. I always feel like Monty was constantly coming up about the limitations, but also having an appreciation for those limitations because he's always thought the limitations made him that much more creative, trying to figure out how to get that boundless entertainment that he wanted to create, but within the limitations that were just forcing him by when he was making entertainment, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, we saw him and we've talked about his way to come around limitations, you know, with creative solutions like, you know, ripping keys off of a keyboard so that he won't hit
them
accidentally.
That was the first experience I had with him, yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, he came down and we bought him a really expensive, really nice laptop.
Let's call it what it is. We bought him a nicer computer than anybody else in the company had at the time.
It
was a big deal.
We were so shoestring. The company had not bought me a computer yet. I was just buying my own computer and bringing my own computer to work at this point. And we bought him the super nice laptop. I was so jealous. And literally one day later, like half the keys are ripped off. And
first thing he did was take a screwdriver and jam it into the caps lock key and pop it off. And then the F1 key and pop it off.
What are you doing? He's like, oh, well, if I hit that, then it messes up the way I work in the program. So I just want to make sure I never hit it. And I was like, that makes perfect sense. It was so hard to look at.
Yeah.
And his keyboard in there right now is completely popped off. I did not know. This escaped my attention. My desk that I made when we were at Ralph Abonado, I lost an office, and then I was like kind of free floating for a while. Monty ended up with my desk that I made.
Where's the hydraulic one?
The plywood one. Yeah, raises and lowers. And of course, he was building something on it and completely like burned part of it. There's all these deep gouges in it now.
Monty ruined a lot of desks. Actually, I was looking at pictures the other day, just going through old photos, and I came across one I had forgotten about, and I showed it to Sheena. It was like it was a moment where Monty had offhandedly said, oh, I think I scratched that desk. I might need a new one. I was like, oh, okay. And then I came down and looked at it, and the desk was like eviscerated. It was just completely destroyed. Had chemical stains from all the crazy, you know, stuff he would use for his epoxies and all that stuff. It was nuts.
He burned his own face. He chemically burned his own face one summer.
Oh, yeah.
Right before Comic-Con. He like was working with epoxies, mixing them together, and then somehow wiped his face and then had huge burns on his face. I was like, Mommy, that is not good. Shouldn't be doing that kind of thing. I tell that story to your sister.
It was more efficient than using gloves.
It was.
He was busier.
What is your absolute favorite like Monty Ohm efficiency tip of all time?
The microwave.
It has to be the microwave.
So for people who don't know the microwave, it's if you have to put something in the microwave for a minute, instead of hitting 60, you hit 55.
Right.
Because it's one number. And it's pretty much a minute.
It started first. It said first it would put in 100. Then he realized he could just put in 60. And that was faster because it's only two digits. But if he hits 55, it's the same thing.
That extra second that you would take to move your hand to hit the different keys was too much repetitively.
There was another layer too where he'd go 5, 8, dit, and he could do like in a row.
Yeah, it was like he could figure out with his digits, like what was the best way to move,
make his way down to the enter button or the.
He was so obsessed with the efficiency stuff. Like the last time he was over at the house, like I was washing dishes and he was like, I was talking. He's like looking at me and I could tell he wasn't paying attention to anything I was saying. He was just looking at the sink. And after a minute, he goes, your sink is not very efficient. I was like, what? How can a sink be more efficient? It's just like a bowl with the hole and there's not much to it. And he was like, I can find a way. I'll make you a better sink.
I'll make you a better sink. Is that what he said? He'll 3D print you a sink.
He'll 3D print me a sink.
I think Monty is personally responsible for me finally learning like a Windows OS keyboard shortcuts and some of the tool. We were, he would go a little quiet or occasionally you just get this hint of a sigh if we're doing editorial reviews. And if you dare use the mouse to navigate to get the file up or whatever, those are precious seconds. Yeah. We've been viewing footage.
Oh, man.
Or,
another computer story. I mean, he held on to Windows XP forever because he didn't like the Windows 7 interface.
Yeah.
And then because it changed some of his shortcuts. And then, finally, we just could not buy a new computer with Windows XP. I was like, Mike. Like, I can make it look like Windows XP. We went through and would like,
he was searching on eBay and like everywhere was like, this is the computer I want, because it's like Windows from 20 years ago. And he just would not move.
Yeah. It has to be like Poser 95 too.
Yeah.
I would be calling manufacturers like, listen, I want the computer you have for sale on your website, but I don't want the OS. Like, can we just get an old copy of Windows XP thrown in? They're like, no, we don't have the driver support. Like, I know you got a guy. You've got someone who's got to be able to do this. And eventually, we got him off of that on the Windows 7. Yeah, that was and then we had to go through and adjust the theme to give it the XP, the classic feel, because all the Aero stuff took too much resources.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want his computer wasting time generating all those flourishes when it could be rendering faster and doing those other things.
There is that. And of course, I mean, if you think he's that way about OSs, then, for sure he's that way about his animation software, where we're like, hey man, new version, whatever. And it's like, this one's doing what I need to do. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go to this other tool? It's like, no, this is the one that I'm fast at right now. It's getting what I need to, it does what I need to do. We're good.
Yep.
Well, people on Twitter are saying that we already told the podcast story before about money in the microwave. They're just keeping the dream alive for Monty. I just want to point out, you don't have to call us on that. That's okay. That's okay.
There were so many cool things about Monty, and I just think that the way he lived his life, where he didn't care, about what anybody else thought. He was just going to go do it, which was really cool. I remember one time we went to, they're like really the first like big award show we'd ever been to.
Mm-hmm.
Like Hollywood Award Show was the Producers Guild Awards, and it was it was us and a few people that worked on Ruby and RVB, and I guess it was just RVB. It was RVB 10, right? That we were there for, and Monty was with us, and Bernie and I had like gone out and like rented really nice tuxes, and we're like gonna look spiffy for the red carpet because we get to walk down a red carpet, and we're like, literally right behind LL Cool J. We were all excited about it. And Monty had gone and made himself one of his amazing outfits that he makes and looked, of course, completely different than anybody else at the red carpet. And we go out there for the walk and, we walk across and all these flash bulbs had been going off and, people taking pictures and you hear like the, like machine gun sound of cameras going off for all these celebrities. And then as soon as Bernie and I walk through, all the cameras turn off. It was like a deafening silence.
Everybody took time to like do maintenance on their cameras at that point. They're like, let me switch to the setting.
Who are these guys? Not two idiots. Just let them pass through. Like they didn't take one picture of us. Maybe like one, like a guy was like, okay, fine. And we get to the other side and then Monty walks up looking super cool and just like, like somebody out of this world. He's like always walked in. He made it a grand entrance.
He was always prepared if like a Michael Jackson or K-pop video broke out. He'd be ready.
And all the cameras, sure enough, go and they're just taking pictures of him like crazy. There's like, this guy's got to be somebody. And he was somebody.
Remember he wandered up to Russell Simmons?
That's right.
Say what?
He wanted. He saw Russell Simmons, world famous producer, walked up to talk. He goes, "I think I know him." Like, he wandered across and said hi. You see Russell Simmons go, "What?" And he looked at him and he goes, "Get a little nod."
I don't. I can't think of another rock star animator.
No, he was a rock star.
Yeah,
he was.
Well, that was the thing. I mean, so the last couple of RTXs, you know, for one thing, yeah. So I think we're gonna have to up our game in terms of our fashion sense at the conventions. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he would occasionally like say something. You guys, come on, you wear this to the office every day. What do you have your Converse and your T-shirts and the jeans and whatever, and you know, show them something special.
Where are your robotic wings? You got to get on that.
But his entrances at the panels were something to behold.
Yeah, back at RTX 2012, we rented a pump it up machine and put it on the floor so that he could go out and dance on it and like have basically exhibitions showing people how awesome he was. And we had this giant banner printed up. I don't know if you remember it. It said the Monty Ohm Experience.
Oh, yeah.
I found it the other a couple of weeks ago, maybe a couple of months ago, going through storage, and I thought, you know, nobody wants this, right? And I went over and I grabbed Monty. I was like, "Hey, you remember the Monty Ohm Experience banner? I found it. Do you want it?" He goes, "Absolutely." And, he came and grabbed it and took it back.
He hung it in his bedroom.
I don't know where it is, but he kept it. It was an awesome photo. It was really really cool. We're gonna have to do something with that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we I think we've over time we've hung some of the like the store banners, the photos of people.
Yeah.
We kind of like it was the master of the dojo. We had his up there downstairs at 636 for the longest time. But you guys so it sounds like some people have stopped by his office in the last week or so. Have you been by?
Yeah, I went by earlier this week.
Yeah.
You know, and then we took his sister Tia on a walk through as well. It's different, you know.
Yeah.
It's different to see it. I mean, Monty also, he also did work from home a lot, you know, just because he liked to work, you know, wherever he was most comfortable.
Yeah,
and he worked in the car sometimes while driving.
Coffee shops, you know, when he was out of town, he would do that too. Vacations were like torture. it seemed like for Monty sometimes.
Yeah, we.
I don't know if a vacation he ever took where he didn't bring at least one laptop and the latest assets for the show he's working on and whatnot. He would always come back and he would have like three more characters built and, you know, the next fight ready to go. And like, you were supposed to be having downtime. It's like for him, that was downtime.
I think it was PAX East 2013 where we were flying up there and our flight was supposed to be Austin to Dallas to Boston, but the Dallas to Boston flight got canceled. So I had to scramble and I rebooked all of us to fly into New York, and then we had to rent a van and drive from New York up to Boston. And we were going to be premiering the Blake trailer at that PAX East. And so we landed in New York, and it's like, I don't know, it was like a 3-hour drive, I guess, to get to Boston, 3.5-hour drive. So, you know, we got in the car, started driving, and Monty busted out his laptop. And, you know, the whole time he worked until the laptop stopped, until like the battery was gone. It was like, you know, closed it up. That he powered down. I think we have an RT Life video of that. And you know, I think Carrie's back there. And I think he just, you know, put his head down and powered down. And Carrie started, I think it was Carrie. Someone started like filming him just in powered down mode. And without moving his head, he just reached out and punched the camera. Like he knew exactly where it was. It was so badass. And I was sorry that I was driving. I only got to see it in the rearview mirror. I wish I had been back there.
Hmm.
Yeah. He did have eyes not just in the back of his head, like everywhere. I mean, it was crazy. We talked about before how he could watch all those monsters simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And it did seem like if there was a foreign object flying at him from somewhere, like when we were at the I think it was PAX. It was another PAX where the guy came up and threw the lemon
punch. Yeah.
Oh god, yeah.
Smack and punched you right back at the guy. That was hilarious.
Yeah.
I think that was amazing. That's one of the standout memories that I always equate with Monty.
Yeah,
and I feel lucky to have been on the stage.
Yeah.
And to have seen that firsthand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the hardest things in all this is, like Gray was saying earlier, Monty's always working, working on new stuff, and it's we'd just been in the process of talking with Monty about like
what was next? I mean, that's how Ruby came about, is that, you know, Monty had done about three seasons on Red versus Blue. And we said, you know, Monty, this show's going to last a long time, you know, and you can be the lead animator for Red versus Blue for years and years, but is there anything that you want to do? And he was said, let me show you this. And he showed, the first thing he showed me was a scythe that turned into a gun. And I said, okay, I'm sold. This looks good, whatever this is. And then went into it, and then he made the Ruby Red trailer himself as like a test concept. And, you know, the stuff that Monty was working on, I think the saddest part of all of this is just, you know, there's a lot of Ruby left that Monty's worked on. And, you know, he's talked with us over the years and talked with his team that, you know, basically hand selected himself to, you know, tell them of ideas that he had for it and places he wanted to see it go. So I feel safe in that, but I do feel sad about the loss of those things that we'll never see, you know, that work that he just didn't have time to make.
Yeah. I think the question, what would Monty do, is probably going to be coming up a lot. We were talking about The Office a little bit ago. There was, you know, we were wondering, do we close the door? Do we leave it open? It's like, no, we're going to leave it open. If you're looking for just a little spark of crazy genius, I highly recommend just standing in there for just a moment, and seeing what shakes loose.
You might find something like a desk of yours.
or if you're looking for various pieces of missing furniture. It's not going to be the same. It can't be, but we can only, you know, we can be inspired by them, and we can keep raising the bar.
Yeah. That's a big part of what Monty did in my life, was keep raising the bar. You know, USA Gray, he always said, keep moving forward.
Yeah. I lost count of how many times I heard him say it.
Keep moving forward.
Whether you were in the middle of a production, or that was advice to the crew sometimes between productions, there's always, you know, once or twice a year, there's this sort of bittersweet moment where, after being in the trenches with everybody for months and months at a time, a production needs to wind down, and you're not entirely sure when the next one's going to start. You know it's coming, but you can't say for sure. And, you know, we would gather folks, and he would just tell, look, just get through, just survive the next couple of months, go do something creative, go study, go explore, go refill your creative well, as it were. Mm-hmm. But keep moving forward, and then we will all get back together again, and we will get moving on the next thing.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, throughout every single day of the last week and a half, I mean, I don't know when I haven't been thinking that now.
I love that was a phrase of his, because, you know, you don't kind of think of these things until you have the benefit of hindsight, but that's just sums up Monty entirely, where he had to keep moving. He had to keep doing, he had to keep creating, he had to keep being Monty, which was an amazing thing to be. And I'm really glad he left us with that as a mantra. It's like, he inspired us in a lot of ways, and he will continue to inspire us.
Yeah, he, you know, it's very sad that Monty's gone, but I mean, he accomplished so much in 33 years. I mean, if you think about everything that he's done, the work he did on Red vs. Blue, creating his own show, it's loved by millions of people. You know, it's going to be distributed now in Asia by Warner Brothers. It's just amazing. And it's like, it's almost like Monty had a sense of, you know, of time, of his limited time, because of the urgency that he had in his life, you know? And in a way, his greatest enemy at the end of it all was basically time. Dying at 33 is just, it's just such a tragedy, you know? And, but he absolutely made the most out of his years, and made the most out of like literally every moment. He tried to, like, you know, make it as good as it could possibly be. And on a smaller level, whenever we were working on projects, it was always, time was the factor of like, this has to come out. I want to make it bigger and better, bigger and better, bigger and better. And then it's just always time was always the limiting part of it to him.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was a couple times we were done. I mean, it's like, this is a lot of times, it's like, people just want the relief of the person in charge saying, okay, this is done. It's locked. We're out. Monty's like, I think I have one more scene. It's like, Monty, please, please, we have no, there, we need to burn this DVD tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. There's not time for eight more shots in the sequence that we're talking about. He's like, I think we can do it. I think we can do it. And there's like several times that we did it because Monty drove that and said, I want to get this done. And he did, and he got it done.
Some of my most favorite touches on productions from the last couple of years are things that we got in there the last night. Yeah. I mean, like you've got everything planned out. The scene was fine as it is. And then he had one more cool idea. And it's like, you know, screw it. We didn't need to sleep tonight, right? Come on. Let's go for it. Come on. Pain is temporary. Heart is forever. Let's go ahead and knock this thing out.
He wasn't
going
to sleep tonight.
Yeah.
So,
adopt that 30-hour day. What's wrong with you?
So, well, we wanted to come on tonight because, you know, Monty was, everything we've talked about tonight, Monty was somebody who really valued, you know, working and really liked doing it. He still did enjoy his life. Some of you are learning for the first time that he was married last year, married Sheena. Didn't talk about that very much publicly, although they were inseparable for the course of the last year and a half. You know, like I said at the top of the show, if we can miss one podcast for Monty's sake, when we were all at the hospital kind of taking care of him or doing what we could to, but there was no way in hell we could get away with missing two on his behalf. There's no way he would have tolerated that. Yeah. So we do want to thank you all for tuning in tonight. We said it up front, this would probably be a shorter version of the podcast, and I just want to say how much we miss Monty already. Because I have any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I was a big fan. Yeah. I was a big fan.
All right. Well, we actually prepared a little video to show you of Monty's work. He's a very bright light, burned for a short time, 33 years. But we love him very much. We miss you, Monty.
Hello, Mr. Monty Ohm.
Hello, Bernie. I was very excited about the moment my first scene showed up at a convention. No one had any idea what to expect.
Got a full house from the Ruby panel, RTX 2014.
With Red vs. Blue and Rooster Teeth as a company, there's a lot of things we hope to create to make people happy in ways they wouldn't expect. Red, white, black, had yellow because of Asian.
It's easy to forget to sleep when you're working on something cool. So you just work as hard as you can, and still there's never enough time. So the thing you gotta learn to is essentially let go.
What we end up making is always larger than what we think it'll be. I do believe thoroughly in giving everything you got towards whatever you're doing at the time. My favorite thing this time around was sharing it with everyone else, my colleagues, my friends, who all worked on this project. Well, for the longest time, it was just assumed we ended up here for some reasons that we don't need to think about.
No.
But we tend to be masters of our own fate. The only thing that stops us from doing the really cool things is time. And we're in a huge fan culture at the moment where everything has spawned off of something. If you look at something and if you intend to use it, you have to emulate it, which means you have to understand it. I've landed in a very unique place where if I want to make a costume of something, I can also make the character that it's derived from.
Monty's my 30 favorite person.
He's amazing.
At the end of the day, we're still looking at people and they need to behave like people. As an animator, there are things you need to notice that most people wouldn't be seeing. The most important thing, do this as often as you can, watch movies or watch shows or watch things. Just keep your eyes open. It's a lot of destiny, really. I mean, very few people have the luxury of doing exactly what they want to do as their job. There's never a day where I forget that. Moving forward, I always think about what's next. So, like, I'm super excited to finish what we have so that I can just start working on something else.